you can get this book. That's great bathroom reading or whatever. You know, just read a little bit every day, and it makes a difference to wake up and to read this. The Science of Mind magazine readings, the daily affirmations are good, but these are better. And so I want to encourage you to go out and get the book. It's readily available. And after the break today, we'll do another reading. It'll be in the form of a meditation. And then we'll discuss, kind of think about what it means to me. Sometimes it's easy to read these and perhaps not see what the point is for your life right now and right here. And so my intention is to try to make these as personal as possible, because they're more effective when you do that. So our theme for this month is New Beginnings, and it's, of course, a January topic, but it's also, for me, an important time of year because the seed catalogs start to arrive. And I've just finished, I'm in the process of finishing reading Barbara Kingsolver's book, Animals, Vegetables, and Miracles, and it's an incredible book about raising locally grown food and some of the research that she did. It's read by herself, her husband, and one of her daughters, but the whole family does an experiment of a year of eating only locally grown food. And of course that can be challenging, especially in the beginning when they're first getting started. But they manage it, and one of the things that is stressed in there is gratitude in that book. And I just felt, when I was done reading it, I felt such gratitude for our ability to grow things and to be able to meet people that grow things around here, because it's such an analogy for the creative process. This month's Science of Mind magazine has a nice article from a woman named Catherine Hall, who wrote Plant Whatever Brings You Joy. And I think I may end up getting the book, because it is a perfect analogy for the creative process. It's based on gardening wisdom. And any of you who've taken a Science of Mind class know that they're going to teach you about the seed and planting the seed. And what happens in the creative process is all analogous to that seed growing up. So this takes it a step further, though, and it's a lot further than just the seed growing up. Like I said, my gardening catalogs have started to arrive, and thanks to Barbara Kingsolver, I'm not going to buy from many of them. I'm probably going to go out and get some heirloom seeds, or buy from people that grow their own seeds locally. And to me, the process of going through my gardening catalogs and figuring out what it is I want to plant in the year, it's a lot like putting together the treasure map, where you go through the magazines and you select either the pictures or the words that you want to arrange into your life on the treasure map. And in some cultures, they teach that that within the seed is the whole tree. And in truth, our creative thoughts, when we first hatch them, probably have the most power of them. We can adjust what we want later on in the creative process, but it's at that very moment of creation that you have an incredible burst of energy and power. And so I think it's analogous again to the gardening process. It's really important that we work in partnership with the forces of nature so that we are successful, and not trying to row against the stream. So what I'm going to do is talk about some of the things that Catherine Hall brings up in her book about gardening and how they relate to the creative process. First of all, you need to plant in harmony with the seasons. And like a garden, our lives also have seasons. And you want to put things in the ground at the optimal time. This really seems self-evident, but for instance, we really don't want to put a tomato in the ground in this climate, which is zone 6, in January, because it's more than likely going to freeze. And you don't want to put grass seed out in July, because more than likely it's going to be dried out and not producing anything. So therefore, in our lives, we need to be in harmony with the phases in our life. at this phase in my life, for example, I'm not going to go out and have more children. And even if I could, let me tell you something, I'm not sure I have the energy to chase after children. A lot of people have their children in their 20s, which is when their energy level is a lot higher. And I've heard from them that works really well because the kids are out of the house and they still have a lot of life ahead of them. Whereas right now, I've still got a 21-year-old at home and I don't know when he's going to leave. So, planning in harmony with the seasons is really important because it helps you go with the natural flow of, the phases of life. Secondly, you need to learn which plants you grow well. Not everybody grows the same plants with the same ability. Except for Connie, I think none of you have been at my house since I moved into Maryland. But I do really well with lavender, and I've got a lavender plant that starts here and ends there at the end of that table. It's huge, and my lavender just grows. But I don't do tomatoes too well. My next door neighbor, who has most of her front and backyard dedicated to edible plants, does tomatoes, beans, everything else really well, and her yard is gorgeous. I don't do those really well, and so if I'm going to plant those, I typically go out and buy the plants from somebody else and put them in the ground. And so, but it's taken me a while to learn through trial and error that I'm just not a tomato person, and not fight it. And I think, when we're trying to plant seeds in our life, for instance, you wouldn't catch me going out trying to be a math teacher. Because that's not really in my interest. I would be putting a lot of energy into something that would, for me, would probably be pretty frustrating because I have so little ability in that area. And so I learn, we learn over time to understand what things work really well for us and what areas we really want to put our efforts into. Another rule of hers is resist the temptation to overplant. Some people have a tendency to crowd their lives with a lot of activity and they never say no. And it's like growing plants. If I put, and I do this myself, I empty a seed packet into this tiny plot and then the plants come up and then I get so busy doing something else, I forget to call the seedlings so that I have a number that could probably grow comfortably in that area. So as a result, nobody does very well. It's all crowded out. And it's like when we get a little overextended, we get burned out and we stop flowing with the energy that we have. And not only that, but once we, suppose the plants do survive into plant adulthood, we've still got to water them, we've got to care for them, we've got to weed for them, and we need to make sure that we have sufficient energy and time to be able to do that. Otherwise, we have a weed bed. So, that's a reminder to resist the temptation to overplant. Next, and probably most important, you need to learn to guard the seedlings fiercely. Now, normally when you're raising plants from seed, what you do is you'll plant them indoors about this time of year, and maybe in April or something like that, when they're maybe about that high, you take them outside during the day, and that's called hardening off, and you bring them in at night. And what they do is they start to adapt to the outdoor temperatures without necessarily being exposed to frost. And you do that until the weather is warm enough that you can put them into the ground, because remember, the ground is pretty cold at that time of year. And even then, after they're planted, we may watch the weather reports. We want to keep our plants safe from frost, so we might have to cover them. We have to protect them from storms and from wind, and the same with our own creations. We want to make sure that we're very protective of our own creations. Not only do we need to weed out the negative thought forms, but we also need to watch how we expose our ideas to other people. And that helps us to keep our visions fresh. Holmes talks in one of my favorite books, which is Creative Mind and Success. He says, Unless we're working with others who think as we do, we had better be working alone. One stream of thought will do more for us than many powerful streams that are at variance with each other. In other words, we need to keep our thoughts to ourselves. We need to learn that we can stay in the world and still think what we want to think regardless of how those around us are thinking. And I don't know about you, but there's nothing that will derail a good vision than telling it to somebody and having them go, oh, that'll never work, or you are so stupid, or you're so out there. Which is why we have groups like this, because it's so nice to have a group of people that are going to listen to what you have to say, and they're going to say, wow, that's incredible. I can't wait to see that happen. And you get a tendency within a group like this to be encouraging, which is another reason why it's good to be in a group like this, because you know that no matter what's going on in your life, that your hopes and your dreams are still important, and there are people that want to listen to them. Number five in my set of rules here is you need to leave wild, undisturbed corners in your garden. And I love this one. In parts of Europe, apparently it's customary to leave parts of your garden uncultivated. And I know that having a Swiss mother, it's important to leave a place where the little people can live. And the little people are the ones that
the gnomes.
Yes, exactly. They stay in your garden, and they sometimes steal your garden, you know, your little shovels and things like that. They leave them out in the rain. But they need a place to live, and they prefer the uncultivated places. And having those undeveloped places in your life that you haven't really cultivated gives your imagination a lot of room to grow and to expand with new ideas. Okay, it's going to get better.
Good already.
The next one is repotting. You need to repot your plants, the root bound for growth and expansion, because sometimes, you know, our plants have their own needs, and sometimes they exceed the expectations, our expectations of their growth. And they will outgrow the space that we put them in, whether it's in a pot or a section of the garden. And what comes to mind when I think about that is wisteria, which is one of the most determined plants I know of. It's a beautiful vine, but if you let it get out of control, it will take over. You'll never get rid of it. It becomes like an invasive plant. There's a wisteria plant that's got to be at least 100 years old that's in my grandparents' old house, growing up through the roof of their porch and along. It's beautiful, but it is one tenacious plant. So you need to learn, you know, I'm sure when they put that poor wisteria plant in, they had no idea how determined it was going to be, and so it's kind of taken over their porch, and it's a thing of beauty. But still, in our own lives, sometimes, I don't know if you've ever had this happen, you get this feeling of restlessness, like it's time to move on, and usually we may have outgrown a job, or perhaps a relationship, or maybe our house. I've certainly experienced that. And so we know that we need to transplant some part of our life so that we can blossom in new ways. And the feeling that your life isn't working the way it is, that discontent, is a good sign that perhaps you need to repot a little bit and move on, or maybe make changes in your consciousness. That doesn't mean you have to ditch your relationship or quit your job, but it may mean that some kind of shift is required. You may have to see, what can I do in the situation that I'm in to blossom anew? Next, you learn that when you're pulling up weeds, you need to make sure you pull them up by the roots. Because I can tell you that I have done some half-baked jobs of weeding, especially dandelions in my lawn. And what ends up happening is I don't get the whole root, And what happens is the dandelion thinks that I have encouraged it. It's like pruning it. And so I get bigger dandelions. And so it's just like with our thoughts. When we're creating something, we need to make sure that we remove the thoughts that tell the thoughts of doubt, the thoughts that tell us that we're not good enough, and we need to take them out by the root, because otherwise they just continue to multiply. Next, and I got this a lot in the Barbara Kingsolver book, you need to bring gratitude to your harvesting. You need to celebrate the fruits of your harvest, no matter what they are, how little. And I'm thinking about how excited I get. Even after I've been gardening for decades, I still get excited when my first seedlings come up, and I know that I have another gardening season ahead of me. And it's good to be grateful for these fruits, for the fact that, you know, seeds continue to produce. And it's also a good time at the harvest time to look at what worked and what didn't work when we're doing our future plans. And you know, when you think about it, in our tradition, we do our treasure mapping at the beginning of the year, but also we spend time kind of looking back over the previous year towards the end of December and looking at what didn't work. And nature drives us that way because our days become, the daylight becomes shorter, so we're spending more time inside, and it's a good time for being introspective and taking a look at yourself. So I wanted to talk about a creative project that I've been involved in to kind of give you an example of this, the seed process in action, because it's been a long-term project. I don't know how many of you know this, but when I was a child, I started studying cello. I went on to a conservatory, and my degree is in cello performance, which is, one might say, not a very marketable degree, but I haven't found it to be so. Shortly before I graduated, I injured my left arm, so I decided what I would do rather than quit music altogether was I switched instruments to a family of string instruments that were much easier to play. They were much they're fretted, bowed and fretted, and so I spent a lot of time playing Baroque, Renaissance, and medieval music. And I probably spent about 30 years altogether performing. And after college, I spent a lot of time teaching and coaching people. And one of the things that I realized is that in the classical world, we have a very structured method for getting performers out onto stages. You know, the years of practice and the training and all of the things that go on. And one of the things that you have to learn that's really hard to learn except by doing is getting up on a stage. And we would have regular performance requirements that would help us learn to do things like put together a program that would help us to deal with stage fright and would also help us in developing rapport with an audience. And I began to see as I left the classical world, I went into early music, that unless you're into classical music, that there isn't that kind of rigor that's given to musicians outside of the classical world. And so I started thinking about, well, what things could I do someday maybe to help create opportunities for developing the type of environment where young musicians start to develop the capacity to perform confidently in public. And so when I moved to Maryland back in 2006, one of the things I realized is we didn't have a lot of venues. Despite the fact that Tacoma Park has a lot of musicians there, there weren't any restaurants or halls, churches where there were concerts right in the Tacoma Park area. And so I just kept my eyes open, and I don't know if most of you know this, but I'm part of the planning committee for the Tacoma Park Folk Festival, and so I have to go out all the time to the businesses, and I'm handing out flyers with information about the folk festival, so I get to know some of the people there. And in particular, I've been watching this one cafe that opened up in April last year. Their primary food that they offered at the time was cheesecakes. And of course, So I became a good customer. But I also, you know, I've been studying that place for a while, and I realized that's a great place for a venue, because it's got an upstairs where you could have a listening room, and it's got a downstairs where with a sofa where people can make noise and it won't bother anybody. So a while ago, I was in there, and I saw some CDs, and I asked the owner, I said, are you guys planning on having any performances soon? And she said, well, I was going to go to what it's called the House of Musical Traditions, which is in Tacoma Park. I was going to go to them, and I said, well, I think I can help you out. The Folk Festival wants to have year-round concerts. And so I was thinking maybe we could use your place. So she told me to have at it, and I came back in a couple weeks with a proposal. What was strange was I sat down with her, and she started going through my proposal without having seen it. She was telling me about the things that I had already written about. And what we're doing is we're going to focus on young musicians who rarely get an opportunity to perform on most of the stages, certainly in Tacoma Park. We bring in known musicians, but I think a lot of the younger performers probably play in each other's basements, and that's about it. Maybe they get lucky and they get heard someplace else, and that's how their career starts. But I thought, well, why not have a venue in Tacoma Park that just focused on younger musicians? And so she was really excited about it, and we decided what we'd do is we'd set up a prototype. And our first show will be on February 10th, and I'm in the process of booking the rest. But, you know, you look back on it, and you realize that the seeds of that whole thing really went back decades ago, when I observed that it's, you know, there ought to be easier ways for musicians to make their way. Of course, I always want to see musicians in a place where they can earn money and be able to support themselves if possible without having to take on jobs like I did to support myself. And so I'm pretty excited about this. But I tell you, even though it's taken years to kind of hone that vision, once I decided to do something and saw an opportunity, it happened really fast. And so when you go back to, you know, the growth process, first of all, I didn't talk to a lot of people about this. It was just something I had in my head, and I kind of went over and over in my mind over the years, but I didn't really discuss this with anybody. And so I didn't have anybody that would say, that's a stupid idea, Judy. And I also, you know, I had no attachment to this particular vision because I figured if it was going to happen, it would. And so I was able to keep the weeds out, so to speak. I didn't have anybody inside of me that was saying, Judy, that is really far-fetched, or you don't have enough time for this. But anyhow, when you think about all the steps in the gardening process and you look at this particular creation that I have, and I'm sure each of you has your own story, you look back on it and you go, oh, yes, this really is a lot like gardening. So, I want to thank you and try to use gardening for all your creations as an example.